Welcome to the NFL Talking Heads Fantasy Football Podcast Show. Here are your hosts, Jeff Carrier and Seth Lull.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the NFL Talking Heads Fantasy Football Podcast Show. Back in the offseason here, it is Jeff Carrier, and by my side is Seth Lull, back to talk about some fantasy football, some upcoming changes in the offseason, how we think it's going to impact some of the teams, and of course, what are the fantasy impacts. In this episode, we're going to talk mostly about QBs and head coaches, two specific positions that have really big impacts on the team. We saw it last year with Sean McVay coming into the Los Angeles Rams and how much of a turnaround that entire offense had. So we're going to focus a little bit more on how these QBs and head coaches might have an impact on the offense and the team, which is, of course, going to have the biggest impact for fantasy football. Seth, we're in the off season. It's not even, we're in the middle of February at this case, but hey, it's no time like any other to start, forecasting, predicting, and keep the conversation going when it comes to the NFL and fantasy football. So my opening question to you is, who is going to be that team that's going to be the bandwagon, potentially overhyped team in going into the 2018 season? For example, last year, we probably saw that with the Oakland Raiders. They came off of a 14-2 season, I believe, a very promising season. They get Marshawn Lynch. You really felt that they were, fantasy-wise, and the price to pay for some of their players are pretty high, and Derek Carr. And they were definitely kind of the bandwagon team going into 2017 season. Sometimes there's more than one. I'll give you mine, and then you go ahead and give me your team that you think might be a little bit overrated and at least overpriced when it comes to fantasy.
You're afraid that I'm going to say the same team as you? That why you want to go first?
Do you have your team?
Yeah, I do have my team.
Okay. You know what? You go ahead, because I'm not afraid you're going to say the same team
okay.
as me.
So there's two teams I was thinking of, but I'm like, I thought about Oakland first, saying, you know what? I still think they're going to be overrated with just because of the whole John Gruden thing. People are going to say, oh, they're going to win the division when you still have Kansas City and San or Los Angeles, rather, and then Denver without. But the team that I think is going to be overrated based on the hype is the San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah, you picked my team.
Now, did I?
Yes.
Of course. And I like them a lot, but I just think, and I know Jimmy Garoppolo finished the season on fire. Like, he was a man on a mission. He's turned the back end of their season around. They finished 6-10. I just think, I know he got the big contract, and he's one of the biggest names now at the quarterback position with the most promise. I just think that they still need to do some work on the roster. And, the draft and free agency withstanding, I still think that they are 1 year away. Like, I don't think they're a playoff team this year. And I think a lot of people look at the 49ers as a playoff team, as the Jacksonville Jaguars of this next season. They don't have the defense that Jacksonville did, and they're playing a much tougher conference. So for those reasons, I like San Francisco. I like them to win 8 games. I think they could win 8 games this year if Jimmy G lives up to, his potential and what he picks up where he left off last season. I just don't think they're ready to win 9 or 10 games. And I think a lot of people are putting them, in that category.
Yep. So I had the same team, and maybe this will be a common, maybe we'll be on the outside looking in terms of a lot of people actually believing in their offense and willing to pay probably a hefty price. It's just one of those, when a team gets that pulp culture, they get into that range. A lot of their players' average draft price and position really gets elevated. So I'm definitely concerned of that for a lot of the points that you made. I think that it's totally different when you have a quarterback come in the middle of the year or towards the end of the year, and defenses haven't had all offseason to prepare for them, enough tape to look at them. They're really only dealing with a couple weeks in the middle of the season, or a couple days in between weeks. So I think that has an impact that we've seen year after year. Let's just take the example of Nick Foles for a second, because what a perfect example of where he was a few years ago with Chip Kelly. He didn't play the full season when he had his 27 touchdown and two interception game, right? He came in somewhere in the middle of the season, played lights out, and was not the same quarterback afterwards after that offseason. Now, he's probably not as bad as he was the following year when he went to Jeff Fisher. Maybe he's not as good as a 27-2, but clearly we just saw from the Super Bowl, he is a good quarterback and clearly good enough to win a Super Bowl. So where does Jimmy Garoppolo fall in that line? You know, he came in at the end of the season, won five straight, played really well, but now we have an entire offseason for defenses to adjust, change, and make adjustments. And that's going to have a big impact on the offseason. Never mind the fact on some of the points that you said, Seth, was they're lacking talent in certain areas, and their best wide receiver was hurt last year, and I don't know his age, but he's probably north of 32 years old.
Yeah, I just think that they need to up the talent, especially on the offensive side of the ball. And then defensively, they're really young. They need to grow up a little bit on defense, and that their division is there. I think is going to be a little bit more open this year. I think Seattle has been in decline the last couple of years. They really haven't recovered from that Super Bowl loss to New England. Arizona's a disaster, and the Rams, you know, had a really, really good season, but you know, can Jared Goff repeat what he did this year? That's, you know, to be determined. So I think San Francisco could make a play at that division if all things click for San Fran and Jimmy Garoppolo picks up where he left off. I think San Fran could make some noise and potentially contend for one of the last wild card spots. But ultimately, I think they fall short and they don't make the playoffs. And I think a lot of people look at them as this year's, you know, a playoff team. There's a lot of pressure on Jimmy G this year.
Regarding just fantasy, though, because you mentioned you think that they might be able to be an 8-8 team. Now, sometimes 8-8 teams can still be good for fantasy purposes. Do you think that even if they are an 8-8 team, that their individual pieces as a whole, you know, is anyone going to actually stand out and have that top, you know, wide receiver one, any you know, outstanding fantasy talent, or just overall they're going to be a disappointment? Because just in terms of relating it back to fantasy,
I think they're going to, I mean, I lean more towards them being a disappointment. I think Jimmy G is going to be overdrafted. You know, we'll see where his ADP is, but I think he's going to probably be a top 10 quarterback taken off the board. You know, he's a really good quarterback, but I just don't know if he's going to have those gaudy numbers that you would need you to expect from him, taking him where he's probably going to be taken. So I think he might be a slight disappointment. I do like the idea of Pierre Garçon getting to play with Jimmy G. He didn't have the chance this last season because he went down with the injury. And we'll see what free agents they attract. But I think right now, Marquise Goodwin was their number one receiver. He had developed a pretty good rapport with Jimmy Garoppolo, and as good as Goodwin was for Goodwin standards, he's not somebody that you're really too excited about heading into next fantasy season. So ultimately, I think Jimmy G is going to play really well. He's going to have a really good season, and I think he's going to spread the ball around, make the most out of the talent that he has. But I don't think there's going to be too many players on the 49ers that you're going to want to own for fantasy.
Okay, so we are in agreement that is right now our 2018 team of being probably overdrafted and overhyped. Let's get into the quarterback situations here and break down where we think maybe the impact is at the best fits, or where they might go, or just these quarterbacks as a whole, what they should do with this quarterback as well. And let's start off with Nick Foles, coming off of a Super Bowl victory, projected to be the backup to Carson Wentz, coming off of the knee injury. What does Philly do? What should they do? And what impact does that have on Nick Foles in fantasy?
Well, number one, I think unless they're getting a first rounder for Nick Foles, that you have to keep him, because number one, you need him as some insurance. You need some insurance for Carson Wentz, especially a team like Philadelphia that just won the Super Bowl and they've proven that they can win a Super Bowl with Nick Foles. So you keep Nick Foles. You have two good quarterbacks. If Carson Wentz comes back, and he's healthy, he's obviously your starter. You have one of the best. You probably have the best backup in all football. And if he doesn't, you still have Nick Foles, who just proved that he's, you know, now he has Super Bowl experience. He's a Super Bowl winning quarterback. So unless you get blown away, they get offered a first rounder, I'm keeping him. If I'm a team, though, I would totally. If you need a quarterback, totally give up a first rounder. I think Nick Foles is the number one quarterback, potential available quarterback on the market to be had. He'd be the number one. I think if Jimmy G were a free agent, I'd put Jimmy G slightly ahead of Nick Foles, but Nick Foles is the guy. For fantasy, I mean, depending on where he goes, if he stays in Philadelphia and he enters the year as a starter, I think it's a great opportunity for someone to draft Carson Wentz at a little bit of a discount if he's going to miss two or three games, and then also lock up Nick Foles with one of your later picks. Because Nick Foles, you know, you're not going to be drafting him in the first, you know, five or six rounds, given the fact that he's probably going to play a short season.
Yeah, and there's a very good chance if he stays in Philly, he won't be playing almost any games, because the anticipation is that...
Unless Wentz comes, I mean, Wentz might miss a couple games, depending on his recovery from the, you know, the ACL injury. And Philly's in a great position where they don't have to rush Carson Wentz back with when you have someone like Nick Foles.
If Nick Foles does go somewhere else, do you think that he will be overdrafted?
I don't. I don't think he has that same like sex appeal that Jimmy G does. So I think if he goes to a team like Buffalo or a team like Cleveland, you know, or even a team like Arizona, I don't think he's going to get overdrafted. I think he would still be drafted behind someone like a Jimmy G. I don't think he would be a top 10 quarterback off the board.
I think he will get overdrafted. I think he might get grossly overdrafted. He played lights out down the stretch. It's hard to ignore that. And all of these teams that you mentioned that could potentially bring him in is grossly not the same team as Philly, not just in terms of like on the field talent, which a lot of them have a lot less on the field talent, but also just in coaching. I mean, let's you know, point out the fact that the coaching and what they were able to do with Nick Foles and putting him in the best position was a great reason, a big reason why he was so successful in the playoffs and to win the Super Bowl. And I don't, it's just, we've talked about it all the time on how these head coaches should be more flexible. They should be more of a chameleon type. And obviously what Doug Peterson did in the postseason was excellent. And that's exactly what you want out of your head coach. And that's what they should be doing. But not everyone is. They either are too stubborn or they don't have the knowledge or whatever the case might be. So I think anywhere Nick Foles goes, yeah, maybe he will be drafted behind Jimmy G, but I bet you he'll still be drafted next to someone who put up very decent numbers last year, maybe like a disappointing Jameis Winston. And Nick Foles on any other team outside of Philly or Jameis Winston, I'm probably going Jameis Winston.
Yeah, I think, but I also, it depends on how smart the person drafting is. Maybe if someone's, you know, going to be dumb, they're going to draft him higher than other people that should be taken ahead of Nick Foles. But I think what was pretty evident once Carson Wentz went down with the injury and Foles took over is you saw how talented the roster around Carson Wentz really was. I mean, even without Jason Peters, they had probably one of the best two or three offensive lines in all football, probably the best defensive line in the NFL, best at stopping the run. They had solid linebackers. Their receivers just, they remind me of the Seattle Seahawks receivers when they won the Super Bowl, when they were really good, that they're all a little bit underrated. Like Torrey Smith made a big catch in the Super Bowl. Alshon Jeffrey had a really sneaky, under the radar good season. Nelson Aguilar had a really good season. Like none of them got a lot of love or a lot of credit, but they're all really solid and they all fit into what they wanted to do. And they had obviously a stud tight end in Zach Ertz. So Philadelphia, one of the more underrated rosters overall, like they probably have the most talented roster in the entire NFL.
And as a quick side note too, I hope that a lot of organizations and head coaches and general managers really take note at both of the teams in the Super Bowl. I mean, you had Philly 2 years ago at pick like 14 overall. They do a trade with Miami, giving up some players, including Byron Maxwell and Kirk Alonso, I believe, the linebacker, to move up.
Kirk Alonso?
I'm screwing that up, aren't I? What
Kiko?
Is it?
Kiko Alonso?
Kiko. Doesn't matter. He's complete, you know, trash bag of a player. To move up about 5-6 spots in the first round. And they swapped first rounds and they gave him the pick. And then that gave them the ability to launch from, I believe it was 7 or somewhere around there, up to Cleveland spot. You know, so they were able to figure out how to go and get their quarterback. Not only that, they did in-season trades on giving up a measly fourth rounder for Jay Ajayi. And of course, you have New England giving up for Brandon Cooks, which after losing Edelman came to be a he didn't have the best numbers, but was a good consistent piece to that offense all year. And my point is that a lot of these teams hold these draft picks in such high regard, yet they can never execute on them. But giving them up for proven players that can help you out in your system in the middle of the season, make that run, it clearly proved dividends this year, especially for the Philadelphia Eagles. Now let's keep moving on to some other quarterback set here, because there's a few others that we want to talk about. The next biggest name, or maybe the biggest name, depending on really what Nick Foles, is Kirk Cousins. Washington does the trade for Alex Smith, gives him $23.5 million per year. Washington, the only way that they can actually trade him is if they franchise him, I believe, at $34 million. I think that's too big of a number, and I don't know what they could actually trade him for at that number, considering that they're also get, you know, I don't know what the potential to Pori, I couldn't have said that any worse. I don't know what
compensatory.
I don't know what the pick is that they would get in return from losing him to free agency, but it probably wouldn't be any lower than what they actually could trade him for on a franchise tag. So he'll probably be hitting free agency.
Yeah, I like Kirk Cousins a lot. I've always been higher on him than most people. But he's going to be 30 going into this season. So, you know, 30 years old for a quarterback is like 20, you know, being 23 if you're a running back. He's got at least 5 or 6 really good years left in him. So I would like to see. I think he'd be a great fit for a team that wants to get back to relevancy. A team like the Cleveland Browns, like the Buffalo Bills. A team, I know the Bills were in the playoffs, but, you know, no, they weren't a serious contender. A team that wants to be competitive. And so you sign Kirk Cousins and you draft the next guy like a Jimmy G. So you have time to groom him, like a Deshaun Watson, someone like that. And you have time to do that. But in the meantime, in the short term, Kirk Cousins is a significant upgrade to what you had before, and he can get you to the next level. I think Kirk Cousins, I mean, the big knock on Alex Smith was that, you know, he wasn't a great down-the-field thrower. He didn't take a lot of chances. He was a game manager. Kirk Cousins is kind of like a more of a gunslinger, and he did it with very little talent in Washington. When you consider Jordan Reed basically missed the entire season at the running back position, a lot of injuries. Rob Kelly, Chris Thompson, Samaje Perine being a rookie. Terrell Pryor didn't work out. He was a healthy scratch for most of the second half of the season. And basically, Jameson Crowder was their number one receiver, and he's a small, tiny, shifty slot guy. So now, depending on what situation he goes to, there might not be a whole lot of talent there. Like Cleveland would be Exhibit A. They don't have much better in place, but they have a lot of money. I would like to see Kirk Cousins go to a team like Cleveland that has a lot of cap space. They can, has 2 first-round picks. They can draft someone like a Saquon Barkley to add a playmaker. They have Josh Gordon. I think Cleveland's actually a pretty good spot for Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, I think the big thing with Kirk Cousins is, and it's going to be really interesting to see where he falls in terms of getting paid. Now that Alex Smith and Jimmy Garoppolo, 2 quarterbacks, have already been paid, because I think Kirk Cousins is a lot closer to Alex Smith in reality than maybe we've all kind of thought over the last couple years. But this last season, no doubt, Washington, you know, had a complete misfit of characters on offense, some injured, some not familiar with the offense. And I just don't think Kirk Cousins played very well overall as well. Not a great running game. He had really good weapons prior 2 years and played really well. So is he a quarterback where if you give him really good weapons, then he can be successful? Okay, great. Well, what quarterback doesn't fit that category? You know, look at what Case Keenum did, and their offensive weapons are really good. So I think that Kirk Cousins will get overpaid. I think that there aren't going to be many better situations than really even Washington was last year. I mean, I like Denver. I think they have the wide receivers in the running game to be good, but I don't know. I mean, they got a defensive-oriented head coach. They might cut one of their wide receivers in the offseason. They have no tight end. Running backs are good, not great, not phenomenal. So I don't think there's many situations out there much better. And if you get to your point was on Cleveland, if they're bringing Saquon Barkley, I don't know. I think it's just Cleveland. I don't think anyone goes there and does anything amazing. So really, I think what's going to end up happening this offseason going into next year for me with Kirk Cousins, and especially for fantasy, is I think he'll most likely be overrated and overdrafted. And I don't even know if he's like the 12th quarterback off the board because he goes to a bad team like Buffalo or the Jets. But wherever he does go to, I still think he'll be overrated.
Yeah, well, there's so many quarterbacks, so it gets to a point where if he's the 12th or 13th quarterback drafted, is he overrated? I mean, I just think that I thought he was underdrafted this past season when he played for Washington. So if he goes to a worse situation like Cleveland, which would be a downgrade, I think most people see Cleveland and would get scared off. I just don't think he's going to be overdrafted if he goes to Cleveland.
Maybe
if he goes to Denver. Maybe, I can see that.
Maybe Cleveland, but. Let's face it, you thought he was underdrafted going into Washington, but what ended up turning out was that it was actually probably the exact opposite because he didn't have a good year. He wasn't a top 12 or 15 quarterback. I don't know what his actual numbers are. It'd be good to actually have that, but the point was he was still drafted pretty high, top 7, I think, because he was coming off a good year. We thought that it should have been even higher, but he didn't really have that kind of year you know, we were expecting, especially you. So I don't think maybe going into this year, we thought that he was going to be underdrafted. But in reality, his numbers didn't prove that.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way he's drafted. If he goes to a team like Cleveland or unless he goes to Denver, but if he goes to a team like Cleveland, Buffalo, there's no way he's getting drafted in front of. He's not going to go in the top 10, I don't think. So, you know, I could be wrong, but I see him being same thing with Nick Foles if he leaves Philadelphia. I see both of them going probably outside the top 10. There's just too many good quarterbacks now.
I think that he'll be drafted in front of someone like a who's the guy out in Chicago here? Got to get my bearings back.
Mitch Trubisky.
Yeah, I think he'll be definitely drafted in front of Trubisky no matter what.
Okay. As he should.
Okay, but when I'm in the middle of a draft, I'm going to ask myself, do I want Kirk Cousins 5 rounds before Mitch Trubisky in the Jets or Buffalo or Cleveland, or do I want Mitch Trubisky? And I'm probably going to go with Mitch Trubisky.
All right, I'm going to give you 10 quarterbacks right now, and we don't want to get too off track. I know we always stay pretty much stick to the script. We don't like to get off track too much, but I'm going to give you 10 quarterbacks just in my sleep right now. Aaron Rodgers. Tom Brady.
What are you doing, Russell? Right now?
I'm listing off all the quarterbacks that are going to be drafted in front of Kirk Cousins, hands down, not even close.
Okay,
no
but
debate.
My argument was the difference between Mitch Trubisky and Kirk Cousins.
Okay, well, who wants to have that debate? Kirk Cousins in Cleveland or Mitch Trubisky? Like, that's the worst fantasy debate ever.
Yeah, but that is likely.
No one is drafting Mitch Trubisky this year. Okay.
That's likely the conversation that we're going to have in August. We're not going to have a conversation of Drew Brees or Aaron Rodgers versus Kirk Cousins. It's going to be, do you take Kirk Cousins 5 rounds in front of Mitch Trubisky? Right?
Okay. Well, 5 rounds, yes. I mean, Mitch Trubisky is going to be probably the 20th or 20 and 25 in terms of quarterbacks taken. I mean, Cousins could go, anyways, let's move on. And that's an irrelevant topic. Mitch Trubisky should not be owned most likely this season. Kirk Cousins, even if he goes to Cleveland, I'm still taking him over Trubisky.
If there's anything this season has proved, it is that you can pick up a quarterback almost anywhere. Talk about the quarterbacks that were after the 15th round. Carson Wentz was on no one's radar. Jared Goff.
Deshaun Watson.
Case Keenum. Those four alone. Blake Bortles, those 5 alone could have carried you to a championship. And if you could have just started selecting your quarterbacks from rounds 15 to 20 and just grab 5 and just see which one stuck to the wall. Alex Smith, you know? So I think that that's why I think that we should be talking about Mitch Trubisky. Well, we will in August when August comes along. And it sounds like you're going to be excited for that conversation.
We're going to dedicate the whole episode to Mitch Trubisky in Chicago. Don't you worry.
Okay.
But it's February. And the last person we should be talking about right now is Mitch Trubisky.
Okay. So. Let's move on to a different quarterback.
Let's stick to the script here. Let's stay on topic.
Let's move to the next quarterback situation. Let's talk about the Minnesota Vikings. A very interesting quarterback situation. I believe all three quarterbacks are free agents. Who do you want them to bring back? Okay. And then explain the breakdown of each quarterback. Do you think that they'll have a successful year even if they're not in Minnesota?
Well, I think it's a really good question. I think we're both assuming, I think everyone's assuming that Sam Bradford's easily the odd man out. He's going to be gone. The big thing with Sam Bradford is his health. If you were to tell me all three would be healthy, I would take Sam Bradford. But right. So Sam Bradford's out. I guess, and this might surprise you, I would lean more towards them just bringing back Teddy Bridgewater. He's going to hand him. Waited for him to come back. He looks like he's healthy now. Even, you know, given the season that Case Keenum had, Case Keenum's 30 years old, kind of a late bloomer, and he really ended the year on a sour note with just absolutely looking like he was in over his head against Philadelphia, a defense that got torched 2 weeks later by New England. So not a good look for Case Keenum. Minnesota's going to win on their defense. Teddy Bridgewater is a lot younger and is going to come at a cheaper cost. If I'm them, I roll with Teddy Bridgewater, but I also maybe look to address the quarterback position in the draft as well for a backup.
Now, I always bring up the Seattle Seahawks when I talk about teams trying to figure out their quarterback scenario. When Seattle didn't have anyone, they were signing, trading for, and drafting people left and right until they got Russell Wilson. Would it not make a lot of sense, after especially watching what the Philadelphia Eagles just did, is for them to make sure that they keep two out of those three quarterbacks? None of them are going to be overly expensive, even with Case Keenum probably being maybe the most just because of his year that he did have. But Teddy Bridgewater didn't play all year. He came off of the injury. Case Keenum fell flat on his face in the NFC Championship game. Why not pay a pretty good amount to lock up one position to at least... You would have to think between them two, and I wouldn't, you know, definitely.
It's gonna be $30 million probably between the two of them.
$15 million apiece, you think? Yeah, if Mike Glennon got $15 million.
Well, then like maybe 8 to 10 for Bridgewater and over 20 for Keenum.
Yeah, you know what? I didn't even think about that, but you're probably right.
I don't know what their cap situation looks like, and they don't have many. Like they have no holes on defense. Offense, they're great at the skill positions. You know, they have solid running backs. I just don't think they have many holes. So they maybe might be in a better position than a team like San Francisco, you know, or Cleveland or Arizona that have a lot more holes. I think they could invest that in the quarterback position to make sure that they have the right guy. But I don't know. I thought if we had to pick one, I'm probably going to go with Bridgewater just because he's so much younger. He's more unproven. He hasn't had a season like Case Keenum did, but he's younger. He's going to be a little bit cheaper. And I think you need to see what you have in Bridgewater, and then go and draft a quarterback as well, you know, just to cover themselves if Bridgewater doesn't work out. But Keenum's going to come at a hefty price tag for someone who is 30, even though that's not too old nowadays for quarterbacks. I just don't know. I mean, the way that Keenum ended the season against Philadelphia definitely would give me cause to pause.
Yeah, it most certainly would, and it will definitely hurt his price tag. However, I'm going to go in the opposite direction because I'm a big believer in, you know, knowing what I'm getting in return. It's kind of like when we talk about our drafting for fantasy. Like, we don't draft a ton of rookies and players coming off injuries or over 30 because, hey, let me just get this proven player who's pretty much, you know, going to be locked in. Now, this comes with a much heavier price tag with Case Keenum, but we just saw them lock up the number 2 seed, go to the NFC Championship game, fall completely off flat on their face. But if you bring back Case Keenum, you have to think that, hey, we're in a good position to be at the top of the NFC once again. If you give the reins to Teddy Bridgewater, the expectation is a lot less unknown. So I would lean towards Case Keenum. Now, let me flip the script here and say, okay, you think that they should keep, or you would keep, Teddy Bridgewater, younger, more cost efficient. If Case Keenum goes somewhere, the similar conversation with Kirk Cousins – Is he attractive to you? Will he be overdrafted? Which situation would make more sense than others? I mean, I guess, you know, obviously no situation with Jets and Buffalo work out good, but are you going to be interested in Case Keenum if he goes outside of Minnesota?
No, and I don't think many people will. I don't think he's going to. I think people realize that he didn't get enough love this last season, having the season that he had for Minnesota, because his name is Case Keenum and he was unproven. And the way he ended the season, he's going to go to probably a worse situation than Minnesota, less stability, the Minnesota arguably has the best offensive weapons when you consider they have Thielen and Diggs and Kyle Rudolph and two solid running backs. So, you know, if Case Keenum goes, even if he goes to a team like Denver that has better weapons, I mean, me personally, I wouldn't have much interest in him because he's just, I would have to see it again. I'm not really willing to, you know, Josh McCown comes to mind, a quarterback that had a really good season later in his career. So I don't know. I would rather have Kirk Cousins than Case Keenum. I'd rather have Nick Foles than Case Keenum. I put Keenum, you know, third out of those three in the pecking order.
Okay. I think that covers most of the quarterbacks in terms of when it comes to free agency. And correct me if I'm missing anyone. You know, there's Jay Cutler out there. I can't imagine there's any interest anywhere.
Nope.
If he lands anywhere. Okay.
AJ McCarron would be the big name because he's the youngest out of all these quarterbacks we're talking about. Most everyone's at the age of 30. Case Keenum is gonna turn 28 when the season starts in September, so he's a little bit younger. He has that, you know, that college pedigree, that Alabama, you know, that winning kind of mentality. He's been solid in spots when he's got the chance to play for Cincinnati. So, you know, I think he's a quarterback that might come with a little bit more upside because you don't, you know, kind of like Jimmy G, although he's less, you know, I don't think people expect him to have the ceiling that Jimmy G does. But like Jimmy G, a lot of teams, because they hadn't seen much from him, they saw, you know, the unknown was attractive. You know, you don't know what the quarterback can bring. Whereas Case Keenum, you kind of know what you're going to get, and you just wonder if it's going to be good enough to get you over the hump. But AJ McCarron's younger, so he's probably going to be a little bit cheaper as well. So he's the other guy that, and he's going to probably leave Cincinnati. He's a free agent, so he's going to be probably one of the more intriguing quarterbacks as well. From a fantasy standpoint, I think with him, it just comes down to where he ends up. Like if he ends up in Cleveland, I'm not touching him. Same thing with Arizona. Same thing with Buffalo. But in real life, if I was a team, I would probably put Kirk Cousins number one, Nick Foles number two, or Nick Foles one, Cousins two, AJ McCarron three, and then Keenum. So I'd put him ahead of Keenum if I'm in an NFL team.
Okay, and actually one player we didn't talk about that I think might present some decent value this upcoming year, depending on the team that he's on, simply because he is going to probably be one of those last picks of the draft type of scenarios. And as a quarterback who runs around a little bit, had a pretty good year fantasy-wise, Tyrod Taylor.
Yeah. I think Tyrod Taylor, and again, who knows? It's still early. Tyrod Taylor, it seems like he's going to be one of the last dominoes to fall. We're going to see what happens with Kirk Cousins, what happens with Keenum, what happens with McCarron, what happens in the draft, you know. And then Tyrod Taylor could either enter the season in the quarterback competition to compete for a starting job, or end up with maybe a team like Cleveland, who knows, or Arizona, whichever team doesn't get a quarterback. I just think that Tyrod Taylor, He's a nice quarterback. He's solid. He's good enough to get you to the playoffs. He's not good enough to win you too many playoff games, much less the Super Bowl. And if I'm one of these teams that needs a quarterback that wants to be the Philadelphia Eagles, that wants to be the New England Patriots, you have to think long and hard if you want to invest too much in Tyrod Taylor.
I mean, as a team, absolutely.
What do you think? I mean, I know you like Tyrod Taylor more than me.
Well, I just like him for fantasy.
For fantasy, he's more attractive because of his rushing ability.
Right.
I mean,
and that's the only area that of interest in terms of any team. I think that I would rather draft a third rounder, just thinking that I might have a little bit more upside. But when it comes to fantasy, knowing that he'll probably go underneath the radar again, just like he did this upcoming year, he's another name that, you know, we just mentioned five earlier. If you had Tyrod Taylor for most of the year, I mean, he was putting up some good numbers on average. And he, the same thing happened the prior year that we talked about going into this, the 2017 season. So I think that he'll present a good return if you're in one of those situations where you're looking for a backup or a second backup quarterback, you know, in the 18th, 19th, 20th round. But let's go ahead and get to some of these head coaching changes. Last year, we talked a lot about it. Changing head coaches can have a dramatic effect on offenses. And of course, at the top of the show, I mentioned Sean McVay, great example. Let's touch on some of these changes at head coach. Which one do you think might have the biggest impact for fantasy purposes?
Well, I'm really interested in Chicago with Matt Nagy, you know, by ABF, the ABF motto, anybody but Fox. So I like to see what Mitch Trubisky does. I mean, obviously Matt Nagy did a really good job in Kansas City. And we've seen some of the coaches underneath Andy Reid go on to have success, like Doug Peterson in Philadelphia. So I think that Chicago, I think that situation, you can see the biggest jump with the biggest effect that it's going to have on players like Mitchell Trubisky. They're also going to get receivers back. Kevin White, if he'll still be with the team, he'll be healthy. And then your boy Cameron Meredith should be back. So he's going to be, you know, a hot ticket, at least, you know, for all your teams. You're going to have him on every, just about every team you draft. So I think Matt Nagy, I think Matt Nagy is one. I mean, Josh McDaniels in Indy would have been nice, obviously. And if Frank Wright is the next coach in Indy, I think that would be another one you look at, because, again, it's not just who the next coach is, like who is the current coach that just got hired, but who is he replacing? And someone like Chuck Pagano, John Fox, like that is such an upgrade no matter who you replace him with, especially if it's a somewhat competent offensive-minded coach.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember when, you know, we talked up Doug Peterson a couple of years ago because of that quick, short passing game. We really liked it. It helps when you have good quarterbacks and good players, of course. But, you know, we talked about that when John Fox left Denver and then they got Gary Kubiak. That was a big upgrade. I think that you're right in terms of you don't only have to look at who's coming in, but who is leaving. And John Fox, Chuck Pagano, two really good names to look at and saying it's going to be pretty hard to have an offense or, you know, creativity as low as theirs. So intrigued with the Chicago Bears. Don't know too much about Matt Nagy. Don't know if his system is going to be all that great. You know, another Andy Reid disciple. But it's not John Fox, so we're in good shape there. They're going to actually throw the ball, so some of the offensive weapons will actually be able to have an opportunity to score some points and get some touches. And I think that you have to look at someone, a team like Arizona Cardinals, and be a bit concerned, right? Because not really any of us know a lot about Steve, was it Wilkes, right, coming in for Carolina, the defensive coordinator. But more importantly, they have Bruce Arians leaving. One of the best offensive minds, gunslinger, vertical threats. Use David Johnson out of the backfield a lot. You have a lot of question marks now to answer for this defensive coordinator who's coming in. I'm guessing the top three or four picks for fantasy this upcoming season is going to be these running backs, Zeke, Bell, Johnson, and Gurley, right? I'm guessing...
And Alvin Kamara,
I'm guessing I'm going to have David Johnson fourth on every single list, just because I am going to be worried what the offense is going to do. They have the aging wide receiver, or, you know, the lack of wide receiver core outside of Larry Fitzgerald, who's aging, no tight end pretty much, and David Johnson, who I think you can have full confidence in because he didn't have a knee or leg injury, it was just a wrist, so he should be pretty good, but I'm concerned with the offense.
Yeah, I agree. Another coach that I think is going to be the biggest failure, probably the worst coach that was hired, was Pat Shurmur, the Giants. I just think the Giants completely missed the mark on the Shurmur hire. I feel the same about that situation as I do with Arizona. At least with Arizona and Steve Wilkes, he's an unproven commodity. We've seen these coaches, you know, like the Sean McVays of the world, do really great things because teams think outside the box. They take chances. They go with these young up-and-coming coaches, and it works out. Pat Shermer is another one of these retreads. He has a head coaching record in his career of 10-23. And you look at some of his stops, like the Rams in 2009, 2010, I mean, the Cleveland Browns, Minnesota. I mean, he benefited from having probably the best collection of talent or one of the top two or three best offensive units in all football when you consider Stephon Diggs, Adam Thielen, Kyle Rudolph. I mean, we just went over it. And he's hitching his wagon to the success that Case Keenum had. I mean, Case Keenum basically got Pat Shermer this opportunity. And Case Keenum might be a flash in the pan. I don't know if it had a ton to do with Pat Shermer. Pat Shermer gets a little bit of the credit, but he's going to New York. And I think that if you are a Giants fan, if you like a lot of the Giants players in fantasy, I don't see how this is a good thing.
And let me wrap up here with this team, the Tennessee Titans. Now, I think that Mike Mularkey is in the same category as John Fox, where anyone after Mike Mularkey and his, you know, just non-intelligent, exotic smash-mouth offense, two running backs that were never in sync or whatever he's trying to do there, not fully capitalizing the skills of the quarterback, so on and so forth. Another retread, as you mentioned, with Pat Shermer, is exactly what Mike Mularkey was. Very similar, I thought, to John Fox. It was only a matter of time. They bring in Mike Vrabel, defensive coordinator. So now they go, they're on more of a defensive focus potentially. I have a tough time reading what the situation is going to be on offense here with Tennessee. It can't get any worse than Mike Mularkey, but I'm very curious to see how well. I guess it's going to really depend on who they hire and how good the offensive coordinator is in himself, because Mike Vrabel is not going to have a whole lot to do with that, I don't believe.
Yeah, I like Tennessee a lot this year. Like you said, it's a newer, up-and-coming coach, kind of Mike Vrabel. He's younger. He coached under, obviously played for Bill Belichick, coached under Bill O'Brien. So I like his background. And anybody he brings in there, I would have to think that this season, a lot of it's going to be on Marcus Mariota. In the same category as Jameis Winston, you know, they came into the league together both season. Marcus Mariota has to have a better season. Corey Davis entering his second season. They have a lot of weapons there. Derrick Henry, I would think one of the first things that Vrabel should do is make Derrick Henry the workhorse. Stop messing around with DeMarco Murray and that timeshare. Give the keys to Derrick Henry and run the offense through Derrick Henry and let Marcus Mariota be Mariota. So I like Tennessee a lot. I think not having Mularkey is going to benefit them a lot.
Okay. All right, Seth, that's our first podcast of the 2018 offseason, or 2017 offseason, however you want to say it, I guess. We're in full swing. We are the NFL Talking Heads. Make sure you check out our website, NFLTalkingHeads.com, and check us out on social media at NFL Talking Heads as well. Thanks for listening.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the NFL Talking Heads Fantasy Football Podcast Show. Try saying that three times fast. With your hosts, Jeff Carrier and Seth Lull. We'll catch you next time.